Welcome to Hope Solo Speaks. I'm your host, Hope Solo. Every year on the 8th of March, International Women's Day is celebrated to commemorate and honor women's accomplishments, raise awareness about gender disparities and discrimination, and promote global support for women. A brief history for us. On February 28, 1909, the Socialist Party of America celebrated the first National Women's Day in commemoration of the 15,000 women who protested in New York against harsh working conditions and lesser wages. On March 19, 1911, the first International Women's Day was held, with more than 1 million people in Austria, Denmark, Germany, and Switzerland taking part. In 1917, the celebration of Women's Day in Russia actually got them the right to vote, as women went on strike for bread and peace in order to protest World War I and campaign for gender equality. The military shot any woman who refused to stand down, resulting in a new government who granted women the right to vote as a result of their protests. It took until 1975 for the United Nations to recognize and begin celebrating International Women's Day. Now the UN encourages countries to recognize acts of courage and resolve by ordinary women who have played an outstanding role in the history of our countries and communities. International Women's Day is about solidarity in our own country and across international borders. I think that we all need to take a moment to reflect on the fact that no nation or culture can thrive if the women in that culture are not thriving. International Women's Day gives us all the chance to come together and think more consciously about how we can lift others up. We have the opportunity to reflect about the past and be grateful to those who came before us. That is why today I have a very special guest, a guest that has empowered me throughout my life and who gave me the tools and the support to be strong, intelligent, and goal-driven. So please, everybody, sit back and enjoy the stories from a woman who has seen life at its highest and its lowest, a gender role breaker herself, and a woman with a heart that bleeds to help others. It is my honor to introduce my mom, Judy. Oh my goodness. Thank you for coming on the show, Mom. I've never had somebody in studio.
Ooh.
I'm a little bit nervous.
And I have to be the first, or get to.
You get to be. It's your honor to be the first, isn't it? Mm-hmm. But I'm more nervous than I've ever been really? On a podcast.
Well, that surprises me. I'm not nervous.
Well, you've lived a life filled with experience. So what do you have to be nervous about?
Oh, I can name a few things, but.
All right, Mom. Well, honestly, thank you. It's always an honor to have you here in North Carolina. But now you're actually on Hope Solo Speaks, this podcast that you've helped me with, that I put a lot of work into, that I'm proud of. And we've had many great, fabulous guests on the show, men and women alike from all areas and walks of life. And the idea came during International Women's, month of March. You're in town. Why would I not have my mom on my show? The one person who has made me believe in myself, who has empowered me, who has elevated me, who has taught me how to stand up for myself, how to fight, how to roll with the punches and move forward in life. And I thought there's no other perfect guest than my mother to be on this show for International Women's Day.
I'm honored. Thank you.
All right, Mom. So we celebrate women's achievement on International Women's Day. Who did you look up to growing up?
My mother and my father, mostly.
Those who were closest to you?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Why?
Of course. Well, for that reason, they were closest. They had a lot of good lessons to teach me, and I had to listen, and learn them. And they let me make my own choices almost always. Sometimes my choices were not the right ones, but we came out pretty good in the end anyway.
So as we really reminisce about what it means to be a woman in this day and age, I was wondering if you remember a time that your differences as a woman were celebrated and valued.
The first thing I want to say is just the opposite, but I can remember now that you mentioned a time when I was actually working for Washington Karate Association and I was instructing students. So that would be one. And then from that, I met the warden of State Reformatory at Monroe, who wanted to hire me as the first female correctional officer to work in a men's prison.
All because of your excellence as a karate instructor.
I guess you could say that.
What other times in life do you remember when you were celebrated? Your differences of being a woman were celebrated and valued.
That's a hard one because I have to dig deep to remember anymore. There weren't that many.
That is really, really painful and sad to come to that reckoning and understanding and realization that there are many women, especially from your generation, who perhaps went through life without feeling valued just because they were a woman.
Looking back on it, I wish I had protested.
Well, I mean, you still never believed in gender roles. And we'll get into talk more about your mom and dad and how they didn't either. But as you know, I want to first know, you grew up, you were born in 1952. So you saw the 50s and the 60s. What was it like to grow up as a kid in the 60s?
I'm really thinking hard on that. And I just remember most of my friends were boys. There were hardly, I think I had one girlfriend. And we were just kind of rugged out there, swinging on rope swings, riding horses, just having a good time. Yeah, yeah.
I remember a story you told me once about there were a lot of bullies.
Yeah, there were some bullies. You know, back then they weren't looked at like they are looked at now. And so a lot of bullies got away with a lot of bad stuff. One I remember in particular is I was walking home. A neighbor of mine was ahead of me walking home also. I remember her long, long blonde hair down her back. And there was a kid behind her, a boy, slapping her hard on the back as she was walking. And she just kept walking. And everybody else was just looking, just watching. And I was just appalled. And I went over and I kind of broke it up. I think I beat the kid up a little bit.
Well, he was the bully.
Yeah, he was the bully, but I got some discipline for it. And when I told my parents about it, my dad said, "I'm glad you did that, and I hope whatever happens again, you do the same thing." Then, I have to also throw in that you did the exact same thing.
Well, I guess the fruit doesn't fall far from the tree.
I guess not, but you kind of got in a little trouble too, and I said, "Good job."
Well, I've never liked bullies, Mom.
Yeah.
Maybe that comes from you. But, it was a different era at that time. You know, there's playground bullies. This day and age, you see social media bullies. Perhaps that's why it almost seemed, what you were telling me is it was normal to see these boys who were bullies on the playground, you know, treating little girls.
I wouldn't call it normal. It was not normal for me. It was outlandish, outrageous to me. And I was going to do something about it.
Well, speaking about your dad's reaction to it, he said, "You get physical with this boy who's being a bully to this girl, and you stand up for the girl, and you go home and you get disciplined by the school. You go home and your father says, 'If you see that happen again, I want you to do the exact same thing.'" How did you feel when your father said that?
Relieved. I felt good. I knew that he believed in what is right and that I was doing what should have been done a long time ago.
So what were, speaking about grandpa, my grandfather, your dad, what were his strengths and weaknesses as a father?
His strengths were that he was so patient. He put up a lot. I mean, he had four kids. I was the only one that ever got in trouble, though. Pretty much. I was the black sheep, for sure.
I wonder where I got that.
It doesn't fall too far, huh?
But you told me, how did he empower you?
I can give you an example. I hated moving from California to Washington. And what saved me was I fell in love with the river. And so my father would let me take the family boat out, just me and maybe a kid that I might have met there. And
by yourself?
Yes. And I felt free. And
how old were you?
16.
So you're 16 and your dad lets you take the family boat.
Yes.
And you're launching it yourself.
Yes.
Captaining the boat up and down the river.
Yes. And a couple of those trips, at least one of them, I put a big old hole in the fiberglass boat, right? So I head home with the boat, a little bit worried about, I have to tell him. And I told my dad about it. And it was no big deal. He just kind of blew it off. And over the next week, him and I worked on the boat and repaired the hole together. That's a strong memory.
You were one of the very few women who had their own boat. When I was, you know, a little bit older, maybe 8 or 9 or 7, I don't recall. But you were one of the only women who had their own boat driving up and down the Columbia River. That's crazy for a kid to see. There's men, all these like really, you know, men drinking, men fishing, men, you know, it's a very manly thing to do, to be out on the river and clean the fish and clean the guts on the, you know, that's the environment that we grew up in. And most of the men in the Tri-Cities, they took great pride in taking their boats out on the Columbia River. And here comes my mom with her own boat, pulling on up to the dock with the kids coming out. I mean, that's a huge memory that I have. And it is really empowering for me. But it doesn't seem like you even realize that you were one of the few women.
I did not.
It was like it was your right.
But you're right. I don't know. Maybe I was blindsided or didn't want to see that.
Well, let's talk more about your mom then. How did she empower you? So grandpa's like, you know what? You're not happy here. When we move from California to Washington, the river makes you happy. Mm-hmm. I'm going to let you take the family boat. You become this incredible captain of the boat. You continue to have your own boat for the rest of your life.
And now I have two.
And now you have two boats and still one of the only female captains on the Columbia River. Which is incredible at 70 years old. I mean, that takes a lot of work to launch your boat, to take care of a boat. And you're still doing it, Mom. It's incredible.
I have to take precautions now, though.
Understood. Mm-hmm. But how did your mom empower you? That's how Grandpa really gave you a sense of freedom and trust.
Well, I guess my mother taught me that hard work pays off. Because she not only was raising a family of four kids, she was working full time and bringing in a paycheck. And
so your mom always worked.
Always, yeah.
And your dad, the same.
Always worked.
So what was the environment like in the household for you when you're seeing, you know, in that era, in that generation, in the 50s, in the 60s, where the woman's not home cooking dinner every night, she's out to work. What were the gender roles in the house when they came home from work?
Well, fortunately, I don't remember any specific hardcore gender roles. I mean, my father was a great cook and he did a lot of the cooking. Same as my grandfather, you know, he did a lot of the cooking.
Yeah, no, I think it's fascinating that in that era that, you know, grandma She wasn't in the kitchen. She wasn't cooking. She was working full time. She was proud of her paycheck. She was helping kids. She was a speech and hearing therapist, working her butt off. What were her qualities as a mother? You said she taught you hard work. She
was always there. That's probably the biggest thing. She was always there.
And she always was working hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she always was.
So you didn't grow up in this stereotypical environment where there's gender roles and gender biases, where the woman has to be in the kitchen. Do you believe that we will ever see a gender equal world?
Probably not in my lifetime. Maybe not in yours either.
Oh, again. Probably so not. Sad. This is supposed to be a celebratory day, International Women's Day. And we still have a long ways to go.
Yeah, we take one step forward and then two steps back.
All right. Well, today is about raising awareness about discrimination. Were you ever discriminated against because of your gender?
Yes, I think so. Now that you put it that way. And it had to do with junior high school sports. I wanted to play football. And there's no way they were going to let the girls play football. They can maybe play flag football, but.
But you wanted to tackle?
Yeah, I wanted to play with the guys, for sure.
Well, you win. So why didn't you protest?
That's what I ask myself now today, now that you have made me think about it.
But it wasn't very normal to speak up then. I mean, the world just was kind of laid out in front of you. And this
didn't
is
never
your
cross
options.
My mind, actually.
What sports could girls play in high school?
Well, there wasn't soccer, you know.
Yeah. What was available to you?
Track, softball, I guess. And I think maybe basketball. I don't remember there being a women's basketball team in junior high school, though. Soccer was not even heard of.
What made you want to play football? Just because the boys were doing it?
It was fun. And it was active. Yeah. You know? Active fun, a little bit daring, you know.
Do you look back and wish you had more opportunities as a young girl to play sports?
Sure, but they just weren't there. Well, I mean, I would have looked at soccer, but nobody even knew what soccer was then.
Well, that's a whole different, yeah.
It is, yes.
Education. You were quite the athlete, however, and so was your mom, my grandma. She was speed skate?
Speed skate. She did it all. She played everything. Yeah.
So that athleticism really runs in our family, but you didn't take advantage of it. I mean, you were a slalom skier on the river, so you did water skiing, and you were a black belt in karate. That's insane. It takes a lot of hard work. It takes a commitment. It takes sacrifice. And you become a black belt and you still don't realize how you are breaking gender norms at this time. And that's why I wanted to have you on this podcast, Mom, is because you don't even understand that you did it your entire life.
I've been kind of naive to it.
Which is why I think I have this expectation for it to be normal in the world we live in. But it's not. I mean, no. We have a lot of work to go, but you become a black belt in karate. Can you tell us about that experience?
Becoming a black belt, it was hard work. I mean, when you get to that point, you have to be at your top physically, mentally, emotionally. I mean, you put your soul into it to get that far. And there was very few women. There was only one other woman, in fact, that was right along with me, you know. Yeah. But that was because she was the sensei's girlfriend.
Of course. Oh my goodness. Oh no.
She was very talented. Okay, she was very good. And I liked her. Her name was Linda.
So did you spar? So there's only one other female black belt or coming up the ranks with you.
Right.
Did she get a black belt as well?
Yes.
Okay. So there's one other female. Did you only spar against the only other female black belt?
Not in class. We always sparred with anybody. Didn't matter what gender. But when you were in a tournament, you had to spar other women.
So the tournaments are only women fighting women.
I wonder if they are still that way today.
I think they are, but we will have to verify that. But I think they are.
Yeah.
So you're in class sparring with men. How are you doing against them?
I did pretty well. I held my own, except for the one time I got my nose broke.
The one time?
Yeah.
It was by sparring against a man in karate class?
With a man. He was a friend of mine, yes.
Did he feel bad?
Yeah. But then later on, he did it again.
Why didn't you?
He punched me. He got me in the, I don't know.
Mom, this guy had your number, huh?
I guess. I got punched in the nose by him twice. The first time it broke it. The second time it scared me.
What about the other men you sparred against? Were there men you beat their asses?
Well, you probably remember I was teaching them.
Oh, okay.
Also. So if they did try to beat my ass, their ass would be in trouble.
Yeah, but you had to get to the point before you became an educator, right?
Yeah, it kind of just grows with you. The more you learn, the more you're able to educate.
So tell me what it was like to the warden of the prison in the town nearby comes right to your karate
dojo,
asks for your instruction. And you are teaching the warden of the prison, of the jail.
Yes, karate.
And self-defense? Did he come to get self-defense help?
Well, he brought his family. So, yeah, probably that.
So he didn't have any insecurities about taking lessons from a woman?
I sure didn't think so, because he offered me the job.
At the prison?
At the state reformatory in Monroe as the first female correctional officer to work in a men's prison.
Well, he must have really admired and respected the work that you did at the dojo.
Probably, yeah. And they were actually looking to hire a female. Mostly to take care of the female visitors.
How was he as a boss?
I never saw him much after that. There was other sergeants and tenants. It was very military-like.
Of course. You know. Well, I know that you've had a lot of jobs, I guess, throughout your life experience. Can you tell us some of your different career choices and different jobs?
Well, I think I started working besides babysitting when I was 15. I was not legal to work. So it was at a place called Buffalo Bill's Wild West in Reseda, California. And I was working as a waitress there.
Oh, no.
But then my older sister got a job there also and ratted me off that I wasn't old enough. So I got cut off. Yeah, I got fired.
You tried to work at 15 years old, huh? Okay, what else?
Other jobs? I think one of my starts was I started as a dishwasher in a restaurant and then worked my way to cook. So I cooked in many restaurants in the Tri-Cities for quite a while.
Were you one of the only female cooks then?
Actually, yes. Yeah.
Working in a kitchen, I imagine.
I don't remember any other female cooks that I work with. Now that you mention it. And then what after that? Let's see. Well, then I went to photography school in Everett. And the first job I got there was, well, I was taking lessons at Washington Karate Association. And after I gained a couple of belt colors, I started working for them. Just taking care of the dojo, doing small lessons, you know, and I just worked up to more and more of that teaching.
And then you were the first female correctional officer in a men's prison.
Mm-hmm. After that, what did I do after that? I did work at Hanford. In fact, I worked at their plutonium uranium extraction plant during the Cold War.
Yes, we do that.
Cold War. During the Cold War. And, and took some pretty high radiation doses. After that, I started doing oversight at Hanford. And I actually popped around to a couple of different jobs at Hanford doing oversight. And I think, you know, at one of the last jobs there, I was getting ready to take an early not retirement, but, you know, a payoff to lose my job. And
layoff?
Yes. Like the day before I did that, they fired me because they didn't want to pay me any benefits or anything. I just wrote a letter to the head of the Hanford to, you know, it just, they were firing me because I looked like a whistleblower because I was paid to report problems.
Well, yeah, you're on the oversight committee for environmental waste, right?
Yeah.
So you're on the cleanup crew from the Hanford nuclear reactor, it's spilling into possibly the rivers, and you're the tattletale.
Yeah, it turned out to be that, yes.
In all those jobs that you've had, do you remember having any female bosses?
Only one, and that was at Hanford.
At Hanford?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if you know this, but men still hold, obviously you know this, I think probably the world knows this, but men still hold a clear advantage in being promoted to leadership roles. However, women are starting their own businesses at a faster rate than men. You were a small business owner. How was that for you?
It was hard work. It was a lot of work. The first one I had was a secondhand store, which was fun because I always liked to go yard sailing and stuff, and I'd get stuff at the store. And the other one was handy woman. I would do some repairs. This is what might be odd. I mostly got seniors that needed work done and a lot of men that were widowed.
Yeah, I remember
called me
that.
To do some repairs.
So for all of you listeners out there, my mom doesn't like to brag too much, but she's done a lot of great things in her life, has had a lot of great occupations. And there was a moment after she left Hanford from the layoffs where she said, you know what, I don't want to be in an office anymore. And she's very handy. Like I said, she doesn't listen to gender roles. And she said, I can fix anything around the house. I am Miss Fix It. So let me go ahead and start my own business with female ownership, driving around and fixing anything. Anything and everything, make you a fence, dig you a hole, fix your sprinkler systems, whatever it may be. This woman could do it. So she opened her own small business called Handy Woman. And I'll never forget it. She drove around in this truck with this huge Labrador, yellow lab named Rex on the back. So it was really cool because my mom went around our small town, going to everybody's homes, rich neighborhoods, poor neighborhoods, to fix things. She was the handy woman, and it was really cool because I had never seen anything like it. And I would go to odd jobs with you. Yes. And there were a lot of senior men who I think needed help and wanted help, but were too proud to ask for it. So for whatever reason, calling you actually helped their own pride.
Maybe. Yeah.
And they respected the work that you did.
Speaking of help too, you helped me particularly. One job where I had to trim some bushes, you know, and you came along to help me and you took that big old bushwhacker machine and was trimming those bushes up here. And you did a great job. And I was so happy to have that and to have you do that.
I just thought it was normal. I was helping my mom go to work and it was amazing. It was awesome. I loved being outside working with you. We had fun. We laughed. The dog was there. People were grateful. It was a really cool experience, Mom. And I didn't know women could open their own businesses to be a handy woman because all you see in the phone books back then when you look for somebody is a handy man.
True. You say that it's mostly women now that are opening their own businesses, and I think I know why. It's because when they're out in the men's working world, they don't go anywhere. They don't climb the ladder, you know. So they open their own business, and they're top of the ladder right there.
Well, it is an incredible new statistic moving forward that women are opening more of their own businesses. However, we're still stagnating when it comes to women being in leadership roles overall on a global perspective. So we have a long ways to go. And as we talk about that, here are some numbers for you to think about, all of you listeners out there. Well, first off, there is a notation that the economic and social consequences of the pandemic itself paused progress and actually worsened outcomes for women and girls around the world. So the pandemic, once again, had a strong hold on moving forward for a lot of people in the world. But here's something for everybody to think about. No country has achieved full gender parity. The top 10 economies have closed at least 80% of their gender gaps. Iceland is close to closing the gap in the global rankings to 91%. Now, I'm going to list the top 10, but before, I want to ask you, Mom, and I want you, everybody listening right now, to think and ask yourselves, do you think the United States is in the top 10?
No.
No.
I do not think that.
Well, you would be correct. The leaders of the free world, after all the progress that we've had here in the United States, all of the commercial business surrounding equal pay and equality, we are still not in the top 10. The top 10, when it comes to gender parity, is Iceland at number one, Finland, Norway, New Zealand, Sweden, Rwanda, Nicaragua, Namibia, Ireland, and Germany. Now, that is one Latin American country, Nicaragua, one country from East Asia and the Pacific, New Zealand, and the United States is not in the top 10. Now, that comes surprising.
It's shameful.
To a lot of people. There are still many challenges facing working women. Women are severely underrepresented. They hold less than one third of leadership positions globally. So when I asked you if you had a female boss, that's really incredible that you did at a huge company like Hanford.
I agree, yeah.
So all these changes that are being made to progress women's rights, do you think they're fast enough to make a meaningful difference?
Well, no. And besides, if we do make a step forward in it, it's like I said, two steps back.
Again, some more numbers for you. The World Economic Forum says that the global gender gap is narrowing, but it will still take 132 years to reach parity. And that number has now changed because we've been backsliding because of the pandemic. And now they have announced that it will actually take 151 years.
My question is, how long has it been already?
Well, like you said, one step forward and two steps back. It was going to be 132 long years to reach parity, more long years to reach parity. And now it's going to take another 151 years. My daughter will not be alive when the world comes to the projected parity when it comes to equality and equal pay. Speaking of children, Mom, you had kids, you were a single mom. What did you have to give up? How difficult was that for you?
What did I have to give up? I don't really feel like I had to give up anything. I just had to take on more.
That is why you're a true hero, Mom, and you don't even realize it. You doubled your work. You were a single mom. Do you wish that you did anything different as a parent?
I wish I could have spent more time with you kids. All the time that I worked, and they were long hours too. Sometimes they were 10, 12 hour days.
And graveyard shift.
Rotating shift was pretty hard. But I was confident that you and your brother were being well taken care of. You were learning what you needed to learn. You didn't even need help with homework, hardly ever, maybe ever. Same with Marcus. I was lucky and blessed in that respect. But I know your dad did help you a lot with it if he needed it.
I recall many projects where my stepfather Glenn helped me, where my dad helped me, where you helped me, where grandma and grandpa helped me. We had a great support system around us, and you provided that support system for us. You were working however many jobs we were working and brought food on the table every night. I had a warm place to sleep and a roof over my head. And I had some baller basketball shoes when it came time to basketball season. So don't worry about feeling guilty for not being there every day, because you were working your ass off and providing.
It's not guilt. It's more like regret.
I mean, we can never get the time back.
Yeah.
And I am very grateful to be able to be here every day with my kids, Sozin and Vittorio. And I remember the first time you started spending time here with your grandchildren when they were first born. I think that's when you really realized that you had to work. You had to hold it down for your kids when you were a mother. And I get that it would be regrettable not to really cherish and spend that time, because you never get it back. You never get it back. But
I will say the times that we did get to spend together were fun. I mean, we did a lot of boating and beaching.
And going to the cabin.
Yeah, we did.
So you really have to make the most of the time that you do have as a working parent.
You do.
What are you most proud of for yourself?
Well, I don't think I've ever felt real strong pride other than proud of my kids, you know, proud of your successes. And I'd like to call that pride more like gratitude. As far as me being proud of myself, I guess maybe every time I got a trophy from karate tournaments, I was maybe proud of myself a little.
Well, after all these years and after everything you've done, so much that you've accomplished and achieved, after breaking gender roles, after raising two kids single-handedly for the most part with a great, of course, support system, but everything that you did shows immense strength, commitment, determination. And yet here we are, and you can barely name something that you are proud of besides your kids for yourself. And that just shows how selfless your whole entire life has been. You've made it about others, and you don't recognize the incredible things that you have accomplished. And I think a little bit of that has to do with the era in which you grew up. Because I think in this day and age, it's okay to say, hey, I am proud of raising these kids. I am proud of attending university and having a scholarship. I am proud of being able to provide for my family, of working during the Cold War. There's so much that I think you should be proud of, and yet you don't see it, because that is called selflessness. And also, I think that's something that was instilled in your generation.
Possibly. But there again, I can't say that's true, because I lived life as the black sheep.
And that's okay.
It was okay. I would not want to be like my siblings, any of them.
I believe I put in your stocking one year, it was this coaster, and it said, I have absolutely no desire to fit in.
You know what? I love that, and I can't find it. I think somebody broke it.
I think Lozen broke it. I saw it over here, and we glued it back together.
Oh, it was here?
Well, but there were two of them.
I thought you had one, and I had one.
We did. We each had one.
Okay.
Well,
but
anyways,
no, I think mine
was very fitting. I have absolutely no desire to fit in.
It's perfect.
And I think those are the people.
That is my mantra.
Those are the people that change the world, Mama. You're not trying to fit in. You're trying to make a difference in the world. And I can't express how much I really respect you as an individual. And of course, you as my mother. What do you want Vittorio and Lozen to know about you?
I want them to know that, A, I will always love them no matter what. And specifically, that I will always protect them from harm in any way I can. I'll take a bullet from them.
There are many different ways of protecting little ones. And I know that you've had to make a lot of decisions on what's the best route to protect both me and my brother. And it's not always easy decisions you have to make, but I definitely know that my children will always know that their grandmother will protect them. Mom, you give yourself such little credit. And that's what makes you a hero. You've always been by our sides. You've always provided. You've always protected. And you still do after all of these years, 41 years later.
Five.
Now I hope, well, 45, yeah, for Marcus. I hope that this particular episode serves as an heirloom for Vittorio and Lozen, because true heroes are those who are right in front of us. Thank you, Mama, for being my hero. And everybody out there, happy International Women's Day.
I love you, honey.
I love you too, Mama. Mwah. Keep on keeping on, my friends. Thank you for being you, Mama.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Hope Solo Speaks is part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please give a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe today wherever you stream your podcasts.
SiriusXM Podcasts.